Chapter 4. Explosions are not rumblings. When Katsumi woke up the next day, everything was fine in his eyes, as he did exactly as Misaki had advised. When he went out to the front porch as he drank his daily tea, he still observed the smoke plume. It was bigger than he originally thought, as it was fresh during the night. About 8 or 9 hours of sleep certainly gave it time to fully plant itself into where things would go. He sighed deeply as he sipped on his tea and sat in the rocking chair that was, thankfully, saved for him too by Misaki. As he finished his tea and washed it, he would perform his usual daily activities as if they were a normal day. After taking a look at the calendar in his room, this was his preparation day for the upcoming day of rest, the 15th, meaning he would not do most of the things he normally did during this time. He sighed, thankful that this day of rest was on its way. During this day, he would do double the crop maintenance, as was his usual before a lunar day of rest. He looked up at the moon, which was out during the day, and found it to be almost at a full moon phase. This meant that he would not have to worry about much during this time. As the day went on, he trained with some different weapons, as was the standard for him at this point in time, just nearby. This would turn out to be an area he constructed himself using the forest and its wood he chopped down, per the recommendation of Misaki and Katsukun, knowing they had no use for the area at hand. As Katsumi trained with different weapons, he would also have the books on said weapons being near him, in case he needed a reminder of something, or he wanted to learn something new. They were also there, just in case he never noticed something about what he was already doing, likely in a different manner that could have helped him better understand his form. He could even learn something new about his positioning with the weapon he was using. As Katsumi finished his weapons training for the day, he went back inside and put the weapon away. Just as the door burst open to Misaki and Katsukun, panting heavily at the front door, he rushed to them and asked them, "What is wrong? Did something happen?" Misaki, tears streaming down her eyes, had told him, "It was your homestead. There was fortification made for it by an associate of ours before it was completely destroyed. Now the Bachenbach are after you and know your location here." Katsukun, who was not crying, would clarify for him, "They know you associate with us, meaning you now associate with Daide. They did not like that you defended your property, rightfully so. And now they got a court document basically saying that the land was to be destroyed." Katsumi was steaming mad now, eyes bulging out slightly, turning red at the mention of his own property's destruction that was inevitable thanks to these people wanting him dead. He yelled, "To the underworld with them! Every single one of their souls is to be damned eternally, unforgiven at the hands of my creator!" Katsumi grabbed his weapons of choice for this excursion, those being his tachi, katana, and chokuto. He walked past them, breaking the advice of Daide, and walking there himself, using his sense of direction and a map he already had in hand after grabbing his weapons. Misaki and Katsukun followed behind him, worried about what he was about to do at his homestead. They were afraid he might have already been considering casting judgment at his creator's hands against these people, who clearly know that he would not accept this mandatory marking through his thoughts or actions. As Katsumi walked towards his homestead, enraged at what the Bachenbach were doing at the hands of the Toramax, Misaki and Katsukun stayed behind. A fair distance from him, they stayed, wondering if he was about to be in danger due to too many units at once. As Katsumi kept walking, Misaki and Katsukun were worried about if he knew what was about to face him, the reality that was about to set in once he arrived at the location. As expected, Katsumi arrived in a fairly short time frame, given that he had the stamina of a racing horse and determination of even the wisest of Buddhist monks in Westneth. He observed what the Tormax were doing. This was worse than he thought, so he hid in a bush just nearby for them not to notice his movement. Katsumi trained in the art of stealth, despite his fox features being able to alert whoever he was targeting. He used his features as a means of moving without getting caught. Now angry, Katami watched as they were setting up what looked to be a bomb of some kind and lighting the fuse with a match. He waited until it was lit to strike. When the fuse was lit, Katami rushed down from the bush he was hiding in, charging towards whoever was managing this entire project. He would then swing the katana in hand towards this mage, but the mage would step back. The mage was now afraid, seeing a half-fox Todd standing in the way of his property being destroyed. Katami threw kunai at the fuse of the bomb, stopping the bomb's detonation, of which the rest of what was cut was safe. Katami, meanwhile, pinned the mage to the wall and placed the cold tungsten blade of Itachi on the mage's neck. Katami demanded, a cold, venomous, growling tone in his voice, "What gave you the right to make my house and property of the Creator?" Katami knew the words to use. A son of the Creator or a property of the Creator meant either the person or the property was to perish by the hands of those responsible for performing an assassination or an arson spree to destroy whatever was there. This would be done so they could make it into ruins. The mage said nothing, sweat dripping down his brow as he realized who he was messing with. The mage conjured up something using his hands due to an aura that Katami could easily see. The mage, however, attempted to keep it minimal, as any notice of it would lead to something horrible happening. Of course, Katami noticed it. In such an angry rage, he let out a primal war cry, turning into a full-fledged Todd, nine tails out, all in full display, fox ears slightly bigger than without his form. This was, once again, Nakuen Araigiri no Gotens. Katami, while in this form, pinned the mage to the wall, hands lower on his neck as the cold tungsten of the blade. He demanded, voice now booming with rage and suffering, venom and cold-blooded growling in his ever-present irate form. "Why hast thou marked this homestead as an property of the Creator? Thou shalt enter with mine inquiry. Of the result of thy rebelliousness shall be on full display for every soul to observe." As Katami made his scathing threat, everyone around him and the mage trembled in anxiety, fear, and a deep-seated denial of what they were seeing. This even included Misagi and Katsukun, whereas Misagi was trembling, starting to cry tears of fear as she witnessed Katami in this form once again. She had no understanding of it, making it incredibly difficult to be in accordance with its stark protective nature if Katami were provoked, which in this case, he absolutely was within his natural law rights to. Katami, meanwhile, never heard Misaki's crying, as his hearing range was decreased while Nakoen Araigiri no Gotens. Meanwhile, over in an undisclosed location, King Artoriad was witnessing what was happening through one of the scrying orbs called Dōsensa, and he could not believe what was happening. Katami, in a state that was absolutely massive beyond a wild incarnation of the son of the Creator himself. Artoriad was an old man who looked like he was middle-aged, sporting a gray beard and gray hair, and wore your traditional Westneth royal garb. This consisted of a silk robe, which also had cotton for breathability in some areas, usually purple or scarlet in color, with white or maybe gold as the accent colors, depending on how formal it was to be. The mitre was ordained with jewels that were unable to be priced due to their beauty, and were kept clean by the king himself. Boots were worn, like anyone else in Westneth, and even gloves were worn, which was not very common in Westneth. Getting dirt on one's hands was a sign of being a hard worker and homesteader, which was practiced even while it was unlawful. The king's eyes were wide open with shock as he witnessed Katami's rage through the orb, buckling in absolute awe at the wonder that was Nakuen Araigiri no Gotens. The king, after grounding himself back to reality, called for one of his servants. As the servant entered, he would answer with, "Here I am, O majestic being." The king would turn to him, eyes bulging slightly in fear, and pointed to the Dōsensa, and told him with a shaky voice, "I pray thee, observe this form on any fox folk that possess it. document its power to the best of thine ability, because this is nothing short of divine intervention. The servant looked at the Dolcensa, eyes widened in shock and fear as Katami was confronting the mage in this powerful form. He turned to the king, saying, "Oh, majestic being, please have mercy for thy servant. But this is impossible to document it, for this information is gatekeepeth away from those who shall now possess it for evil." This servant knew something was wrong with his command. "Nonsense!" The king slapped the servant as he yelled out, "Thou hast no right to speak to thy king in this haughty manner. Findeth where this doth in fox folk like Sire Keychoodle, and plan something about it. The kingdom shall be destroyed if we cannot observeth what is possible with this divine intervention." The door had a loud noise made, as another servant, burly and muscular in stature, was angry as to what was happening. He walked up towards the king, and with a cold, stinging tone in his voice, he told the king in no uncertain terms, "Did thou not hear thine servant? Gathering information on fox folk is impossible, for they knoweth any group of peoples that they do not interact with, even if they are in disguise. Nothing shall work with these fox folk, for they know trickery themselves."
"How can it be that it be imperceivable to gather any information that was lost from these folk?"
The king was scared, likely because he was denying their reality, that it might have been impossible for someone to do something like this. The king was not someone who could deny anything, but would do it anyway as a means of gaslighting his subjects. However, this meant that anyone who was willing to follow along with the king's dictates was participating in the denial of reality that natural law was going to stop in an instant. This is when a voice boomed, scaring everyone except the burly servant to the king, saying, "What is this that thine plans be revealed to fox folk? Hast thou not knoweth that thine methods of living hath always been incompatible with mine laws, rulings, and seasons? Hath thine calendar ye useth been aligned with the sun god worship?" The voice was nowhere to be seen physically, and nobody but this burly servant was sure if it was a hallucination. Both the king and skinnier servant froze when they heard this, not knowing exactly what this could mean. Was it some sort of voice that was recognizable? Or was it one that was not heard from in a very long time? Only time would tell as the voice spoke again. The voice then asked, "Had it not been known that mine servants, the fox folk I understandeth thou speakest of, hath no desire to interact with them who they find to be evil in mine eyes?" This is when the king would scream in pain, one that was not felt in a very, very long length of time. The pain was sharp, piercing through his entire body, like to that of spiked swords that were cleaned before an execution was to take place. No blood would be extracted from the king, as this was internal pain that was too strong to deny who it was doing it. This voice spoke as the king was in pain, saying, "Thine traditions, rituals, and regulations are those the heathen hath performed for centuries. For thou in particular, it was only a matter of time before I would remembereth mine covenant with Arortama the Strong, who hath passed away as a servant of mine. Whom thou art targeting is a descendant of mine servant, whom thine ancestors hath murdered due to not following mine laws, regulations, and rituals, for which I hath approveth in the texts I writeth for everyone to follow. Thou art the descendants of Hoshiano and Kasuda, evil and scornful to mine face. As if there were nothing for me to do with these people, I hath destroyed their places of worship, for they were heathen, disregarding everything I hath taught them. Now I am left no choice but to destroy Westneth, and have it rebuilt by those who love me and keepeth mine commandments. Anyone who hath no decency to follow me as my son hath done, thou shalt die the death, and be in this world no more." After all of this, The pain the king suffered from had went away in an instant, and the voice had nothing further to say. Both the king and the gangly servant trembled in fear. They were realizing that what they had heard might have been the voice of the Creator, who remembered the covenant he made with Arotama the Strong, of whom all the prophets were descendants of. It was possible it was not the case, but what the burly servant said might have given a clue to what the king was denying the entire time. The realization that there was, indeed, a god, a singular deity, whom was scorned and mocked by the citizens of Westnith's upper class for years. And now, since this being seemed to have haunted and maybe traumatized the king, this looked to be the end for Westnith. In a panicked state, the king turned to both of his servants and yelled out, "Take him down, however thou must, I say, take him down!" The burly servant told the king, "That is not possible, for we shall be slain by this being, who is a prophet among our kind, despite being half fox. If we do attempt to murder him, everyone from his tribe shall be after us, and they shall not stop until all of us perish from this world. It is only a matter of time before this divine entity activateth his servants, the fox folk, and they eventually destroy Westnith at his command." The burly servant stepped back, disrobed his usual garb, leaving a kimono he was wearing the entire time. In full view of the king, his fox ears and two tails showed themselves. He also grabbed his great sword and raised it high above his head. The gangly servant went out of the room, realizing that the Tormach and Bachenbach groups were now fully compromised. This burly fox man yelled with his great sword raised to the heavens, "Let this be a sign of the coming earthquake against thy people, when the sun, moon, and stars shall fall, and the kings of this world be not for those who serve the Creator of all beings. Thou hast a chance to change thy ways, but ye hath hardened thine hearts, and chose not to follow the Creator. Therefore he shall cause an earthquake, great and grievous, sores, bad and grievous, water turning into blood, and the fall of the sun, moon, and stars. Let this be a witness against thee, in the authority of the Creator, and all he hath done for 12,000 years, we stood on this very ground." With one strong swing of the sword, the castle started to rumble and was brought down to the ground after 8 hours. During this time, everyone was evacuated from the castle, but King Artoriad XII was not so lucky. The king was shut in, unable to escape the falling rubble that was to be placed onto his head. As the rubble fully fell, the king somehow escaped this grievous reality. As Katsumi drove away all the people attempting to blow up his house, his anger got worse and worse and worse over time. After he knew everyone had escaped from his grasp, this was when he just started walking back to the other homestead to which he stayed at. It would not take long for him to do this, though he had a limited amount of time before he would go ahead and pass out again. This was done as a result of being in the state of Nakuen Araikiri no Gotens, as he once again used it to defend his own property. As he just arrived at his destination again, the same homestead he had lived in for a little sliver of time, he passed out on one of the sofas due to exhaustion and Nakuen Araikiri no Gotens. Meanwhile, Misagi and Katsukun had both entered and witnessed Katsumi passed out on the couch after harshly defending his own property. Misagi just held Katsumi's hand as he rested on the couch and stayed by his side for a while. Katsumi had no idea of this because he felt unconscious, though he was not at the same time. As for when Katsukun went ahead and made some chamomile tea, likely just for him and Misagi, he was still reeling at what had just occurred between Katsumi and the king's foreman, attempting to burn a house like that in the hopes of ensuring that Katsumi passed away, while uncalled for, was perfectly legal under this charter to the Bachenbach and Tormax. He was still processing why Katami was targeted for murder, since he was unwilling to join the Bachenbach, and it was mandatory to join one of these two groups. Katami was targeted for destruction. He was wanted dead or alive because he rightfully defended natural law, of which the Bachenbach and Tormax actively rejected. Even to this day, as was tradition around these parts, these two groups were rivals. They were never enemies of each other, for even Katami knew, followed by Katakun and Misagi, that they were working with each other, likely at the hands of the king playing both sides. Meanwhile, Misagi wrapped her tail around Katami and stroked his hair as he slept soundly, despite having just zonked out on the couch. She was slowly starting to see the bigger picture with Katami's role of being the protector he was. However, as Katakun set down his tea for himself and Misagi, she just climbed next to Katami and pulled him close like she was a protective mother to him. Misagi had done this in the past to Katami, but not to the level of protectiveness as was seen here. Misagi turned to face Katakun and asked him, "Did we not think he was a prophet all those years ago when he read the holy text of the fox people?" Katakun nodded and recalled, "I thought that he was indeed a prophet from the beginning. Maybe his family was Bachenbach or Tormach, and they wanted to get him in too. That was why he escaped Roquat in the first place." "I had also remembered when I escaped alongside him," Misagi mused to Katakun. "You immediately knew why I had done so, and you followed me, because we were friends with what turned out to be a prophet of the fox people, despite being half fox to begin with." She looked into Katami's closed eyes as she continued, "I remember seeing him escaping the harsh reality of the village, which was nothing more than trouble for anyone and everyone who lived there. Roquad was not for Katami, and his deity likely knew this, which was why I believe he was called to leave Roquad and never come back." "That still does not explain why he chose Wesnith, however." Katakun sighed before continuing, "What if Wesnith was not the right place for him either in the long run?" "I think Katami's deity has a plan, which may or may not require departing from Wesnith altogether." Misagi knew Katakun had a point, particularly given that almost anybody could see where Katami would go, if they were in like manner to him, though not exactly exalting him. He would not want that at all. "I do not know if I can even trust Wesnith to be safe anymore." Katakun's concern, while valid, was maybe overstating things slightly. That was when a bright flash suddenly hit the room, causing Katami to wake up from his slumber. He rubbed his head as he sat up, and there he was, the son of the creator Katami had been following for years. Methuselah. Katami could not believe his eyes at what he was seeing. "I have full understanding as to why thou mayst not believe me at this moment. 'Tis but a worthy prophet in mine eyes, defending everything I hath commanded Katami to do." Methuselah's voice was deep, almost as deep as Katami's, but still deep enough to be understandable. He looked at Katami, and he asked him, "Did thou protect thy home as I had commanded, despite the current state of affairs I wedgeth you between at this time?" Katami nodded, saying, "That I have done, for I knew thou would not desire me to abandon everything in mine own homestead." He sighed before continuing, "After all, 'tis not every waking moment of a day when ye show thyself to those worthy of thy visit." Methuselah nodded, sitting next to Katami. He would tell him, "I observeth from the heavens above that ye were protecting mine word and using natural law to thine advantage." Methuselah looked at Katami before bluntly telling him, "There hath been a reason you were selected for such a powerful power, of which hath been voted upon by mine legions in the heavens." He then turned to Misagi and Katakun, whose facial expressions were those of shock, awe, and wonder at the sight of this being. "Hath he associateth, to wit, mine prophet, for an length of time?" He seemingly knew the answer to this question. Yea, we have done so, Misaki responded, unable to describe her awe. We were childhood friends for years, even after we departed from Roquad Village and moved into Central Westneth as a whole. That explained things that I had originally planned for Katsumi. Methuselah leaned back on the couch and asked Misaki, Had thou considered staying close to Katsumi, lying with him to conceive? Katakun explained to Methuselah, She had not, for she hath been afraid of bearing a son, for her mother had perished from childbirth trauma. Tis a fright she cannot bring around on her own. Methuselah stroked his long white beard for a moment, thinking about this sort of condition that Misaki had. He turned to Misaki and asked her, Since when were thou afraid of succumbing to the self-same as thy mother after ye found out of her passing? As far back as I can remember, Methuselah. Misaki held Katsumi's hand tight as she said this. I had a care of potentially being killed by the same thing, as if I were to be cursed after bearing child, and giving suck, only to have a hex placed on me. I understand it that ye hath no ability to tell me. Methuselah sighed before continuing. I know of thy works, and thine avoidance of the mark of destruction, of which I had my disciple write in the apocalyptic texts. He then nodded and told her, I hath no bearing on thine life choices, but it be transparent to me that I could not let this go further. He looked into her eyes before saying, Mine father would like thee to keep mine prophet safe, to protect and cherish him until the day he perishes. He turned to Katsumi and told him, Katsumi, thou shalt bear a son with Misagi in the future, but at this current time, it is not right now. I shall find a way to heal the seemingly unceasing ailment for Misagi, and once she is fully broken from this generational curse, mine father desireth thee to go into Misagi and bear a son in his authority. Katsumi's eyes narrowed at Methuselah's request. Katsumi, lying with Misagi, to bear a child who would be trained under Katsumi to be a prophet? Was this a family of prophets and prophetesses to be started with Katsumi at the helm? He immediately bowed himself at Methuselah's feet before saying, Rabbi, how can I bear fruit when I am just getting started in building my life to thine desires? How is it right for me to do this at thine behest? Methuselah understood why Katsumi did this. This was humbling for Katsumi, as he had no idea he was even supposed to be a father in the first place. Meanwhile, Misagi was holding Katsumi's hand still, stroking it tenderly with her thumb, supporting him through whatever was occurring.